everybody, and welcome to another epic episode of OEM TV. Notice I said epic this time, not awesome. I was just berated by at least three different people for my use of the word awesome 30 times a show. Apparently, it's caused a schism in our audience. So there's some people who love it, and there's some people who are just like, come on, Gavin, get over yourself. And for that former crowd, get over yourselves. Awesome is an amazing word. Again, anyway, I'm joined with Jeff Gazier, again, making his return appearance to OEM TV. Jeff, glad to have you back. Great to have you back. Welcome again.
Good to be here. It's awesome to be here, actually.
It is awesome to be here, isn't it, Jeff? really cool. So, Jeff, you're here to talk to us about VR, right? VR is like life right now. It's becoming the biggest thing. Tons of equipment manufacturers are supporting it. I'm loving it. I'm having a great time with it. Things are becoming more cost effective. And right now, a ton of gamers and VR developers are looking into what hardware do they need to support this, right? So let's just talk about the general landscape in terms of devices and options we have out there for people looking to get into VR. What do you think is out there?
Sure. Well, right now it's, you know, VR has been a long time coming for years. And I guess it all really started when the Oculus Rift Kickstarter happened a few years ago. So we finally have headsets now. There are two for the PC that are kind of leading the way. There's the Oculus Rift, which has been available for a while now, and then the HTC Vive. And they're very similar in some respects. The screens are quite similar. The basic capabilities are the same. But the big difference between them is the HTC Vive has motion controllers that are available now, what they call a room scale experience. You can actually set up a rather large area and walk around in it. Whereas the Oculus Rift is designed for a seated experience right now. So you only have a single motion tracker and you use an Xbox controller to navigate and control games. But they're coming out with their own motion controls. I'm guessing they'll be out before the end of the year. At that point, they'll sort of be on parity right now. The HTC Vive is a little bit more expensive, but you get the motion controllers and that room scale experience. So I expect probably by the time that they're both fully available, you'll have a similar price between the two. And it's not cheap. It's, you know, $600 for the Rift and $800 for the Vive. So this is definitely still an early adopter platform and something for people who are really into VR and want to get into it, but it's not really reaching that super mainstream price.
Yet, right?
Yeah, because you also need an expensive PC.
You do.
You know, about $1,000 you're going to need to spend on a PC to run VR games. And that's sort of for the bare minimum. Mm-hmm. The spec Oculus called for when they first announced the Rift was a GeForce GTX 970 or an AMD Radeon R90 graphics card. So those are mid-range graphics cards from a couple of years ago. Quad-core CPU, 16 gigs of RAM. So you need a reasonably powerful system to actually play these games. And what we wanted to do was look into how much graphics power you actually need, because the graphics is probably the most demanding element of VR. And we wanted to see, you know, if you start with a 970 as the minimum specification, what do you gain from stepping up to more expensive graphics cards and even some of the latest ones that have come out in the last couple of months?
Yeah, definitely. And to your point, I just wanted to say, last year when the specs were released for the Oculus GTX 970, mind you guys, this is a 970 desktop GPU. This is not a 970M. Do not do that to yourselves. Actually, I don't believe their SDK even supports it. I think I ran into that problem last year at a hackathon with my Razer Blade. It was like, I'll code for the Oculus today. And the SDK was pretty much like, nope, no joke, no fun. A good question is why are those delimiting factors, right? Why are we sucked into, I have to have this relatively high mid-tier to high-end graphics card to make that happen? And the article we're referencing here is from edgeup.asus.com. I'm gonna have that appear here.
The magic of post-processing.
Great. And in that article, we talk about the graphics cards that are supported for VR right now and why we need to have that bang, right? The power for an Oculus or for an HTC Vive. And it's primarily because we need to run at 90 hertz. And so, Jeff, I'm going to have you explain the why.
So that it basically comes down to making you not puke.
Yeah.
Virtual reality is a really different experience than playing games on a traditional PC or even on a console. So in consoles, the frame rate you'll typically get maybe 30 frames per second. On the PC, you're generally targeting at least 60 frames per second, although you can go much higher than that. But on the Oculus, they refresh at 90 hertz or 90 frames per second. And unlike what you might get on the PC or a console where you talk about average frame rates, for these headsets, 90 is really what they refer to as the minimum. Like, that's the bar that has been set sort of for the, you can move your head around and the world will track with you and you won't get this kind of ghosting effect or this feeling where you're moving ahead of where the action is, and that can destroy the sense of presence, which is what they use to describe in VR, feeling like you're actually somewhere else. So any little thing that disrupts that, it can either cause motion sickness or kind of break that immersion that you have in the virtual world. And it's actually funny because it's a lot more immersive in VR than it is playing a traditional game, but that also means that you have more to lose. So if you get a little hitch or a little hiccup in performance when you're playing a normal game, it's not as big of a deal as when you're in VR and the entire world is affected around you, as opposed to a screen that's, you know, sitting a couple of feet away from you. So it's sort of a more engaging experience, but it's also more sensitive and a little bit more fragile as a result. So that's why performance is so important. And they've actually come up with some neat little tricks. So in a PC, if you miss a frame or your performance drops slightly, the system just sort of tolerates it, and the performance drop will be reflected in the display. But with these new headsets, they always run at 90 hertz. So you're getting a new frame every 11.1 milliseconds, no matter the performance of the system. And the system is not fast enough to give you an actual new frame of animation. What it'll do is it'll take an old frame and use a technique called time warp or repositioning it, which is basically figuring out roughly what that frame is supposed to look at based on this sort of old view of the scene and then whatever your head movement was between when that frame was generated and when this new one is supposed to show. So it's actually surprisingly good at kind of faking a new frame and maintaining that sense of fluidity. But the effectiveness does depend a little bit on the game you're playing and what you're doing in it. The more you're moving your head, the more little artifacts from doing these repositions or time warps, the more they pop up. So they've come up with a pretty good solution for making up for performance drops. But the ideal situation is really never to run into situations where you have to reposition or rewarp those frames. So you're always delivering kind of a minimum frame rate of 90 FPS.
Which is ideal, right? A developer's job is always to plan for that worst case scenario. But ideally, yeah, you do want it to run at 90 FPS. To put this in perspective, guys, I am a living, breathing example of old school Oculus, very early stage Oculus days. One of the guys that needed the bucket. I tried on a game, man, and everywhere. It was horrible. So yes, I can totally understand the need for it. And to, again, echo your point, Jeff, when you have one of these headsets on, you're effectively cutting out the rest of the world from you, right? So your only experience is the experience that the developers, the artists, what have you, are giving you. My periphery is gone. So I'm relying on this game to simulate what I would normally see. And we see pretty quickly, right? Our eyes are really, really good at faking things like depth perception and stuff like that. So I need that recreated in the game or else Vomit City. So let's talk about the cards, the GPU lineups that are supporting VR right now. On the NVIDIA side of things, we've got a new lineup, 970 from last year, sort of the baseline for the desktop. But the new lineup, you mentioned earlier, we can start from the NVIDIA 1060 as sort of the baseline VR experience.
Yeah, the NVIDIA just launched these new Pascal-based cards. They started in May with the higher end, the 1080, and then released the 1070, which is sort of a slightly cut-down version of that, and then the 1060, which is based on a lower-end chip. So it's really a mid-range graphics card, and that's based on the testing that we've done, I think is kind of the minimum bar that I would recommend for VR. We did a bunch of testing with the 970 as well, and then the 980 and the 980 Ti from the previous generation. And the 970 is the minimum spec, and the games will run with that card, and you'll get a reasonably good experience. But depending on the game, you will run into situations where you're doing a lot of this time warping and not having those frames ready for that 11 millisecond cutoff point. And depending on the game, that can affect the experience a lot or only a little. We tested three when we were doing this article. We did Minecraft, which now supports VR with the Windows 10 version. Project Cars, which is a really demanding simulation game. It's really well suited to VR, but even if you're just playing on a PC, you need a serious graphics card to run it. And then Elite Dangerous, which is a space sim, which is actually the sort of 3D I guess the ability to look around in three dimensions really comes through in that game, because it's sort of a, you know, an old Wing Commander style, you know, flying around in space. You can look all around you, dogfighting and stuff like that is really good in VR. And we found that these three games behave very differently, even with the same card. So the GTX 970, while it's fine for Minecraft, even in that game, there are some instances where we found you're missing this cutoff point and have to do this time warp frames. And you do notice it sometimes. If your head is moving or if you're looking at specific parts of the scene, you'll see little hitching or little bits of judder in the display. And fortunately, they don't completely ruin the experience, but it is noticeable. And some of the other games, like Project Cars, you get that a little bit more. That game is actually, because it's a driving game and your attention is generally focused on what's happening right in front of you, anytime you're warping frames doesn't have as big of an impact on the actual experience, because you're kind of locked in on what's ahead of you and you're not doing this head rotating, which makes compensating and warping those frames more difficult. But if you take a game like Elite Dangerous, where you are more likely to be looking around your cockpit and looking around your surroundings, even that though that game is less demanding overall and actually ran better on the minimum spec card, the impact of any sort of drop frames was more noticeable. So it's kind of a weird landscape where it depends very much on the game you're playing and then what you're doing in the game, how much your experience is going to be affected when the frame rate drops a little bit.
But I suppose a basic rule here for someone looking to build a new machine or upgrade their graphics card is just to say, you're definitely going to notice the difference between a 1060 and a 1070, right? So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, if you've got the extra, go ahead.
Yeah, we found there were almost kind of like multiple tiers. So the GTX 970 and the Radeon cards we tested, the R9 390, which is very similar to the 290, which is kind of that minimum Oculus spec, and the new RX 480. Those are all less expensive cards, and they're all kind of at the, this is just good enough for the experience, but I'm definitely noticing the limitations. One of the cool things about the Oculus headsets is they have a performance HUD that will actually show you in real time when frames are being dropped, and then also how much GPU resources you have in reserve while you're playing the game. And what we found in a lot of this is that those cards are running right at the limit of, you know, how many resources they have. So anything that's even a little bit more demanding in a scene can trigger drop frames. But if you step up kind of to the next level, which would be the GTX 980 and then the new GTX 1060, that's a definite step up in experience. You get much fewer drop frames, especially in Project Cars and with higher details or in Elite Dangerous. And it's definitely an improved experience that feels smoother. You'll notice fewer of the little hiccups that happen on those minimum spec cards. In the article, I had to channel a little bit of Office Space, and it's, if you want to do the bare minimum, the minimum spec is okay. But, you know, if you want extra pieces of flair, it's definitely something that makes a very noticeable difference, even just moving up to that next tier. And then the next tier above that, which would be the 1070, is I think actually kind of the sweet spot. It's not as good of a value as the GTX 1060, which runs about $330. The 1070 is closer to, you know, $450, $460. But again, it's this noticeable step up in performance that really cuts out even more of those drop frames and those little hitches. And even on the 1060, you don't completely eliminate them. And especially in games, if you want to turn up the details, a lot of our testing we did with relatively low, medium in-game details, which you sort of have to do in a lot of VR games to hit that 90 hertz. So if you go up to something like the 1080, then you have even more headroom.
I'm sorry to cut you off. To be sure, you said 1060, so I think you were referring to 1070.
1070,
okay, just wanted to throw that out there, that addendum, guys. great. So, at the end of the day, it's just get the best you can afford at the moment, right? So the cool thing is this website mentioned here shows different performance indexes of those three games you guys tested, right? Elite Dangerous, Project Cars, and Minecraft for Windows 10 on a ton of different cards, right? The 1070 through the 1080, the 970 through the 1080 and the RX 480 and the R9 390, right? So if you guys are interested in that, feel free to hit that website up. So that's that's a really good, that actually answered my next question, which was, what experience does a 1080 give me versus a 1070? Why the extra couple hundred bucks, right? Or a hundred or so bucks?
It's smoother, you know? It's one of those things that this is the first wave of VR games too. So this is, you know, if you follow PC gaming, you know that every new generation of games will push higher end cards that much further. So if you take a game like Elite Dangerous, most of the testing we did with our sort of VR high preset, which is part of the game, and most of the cards run it reasonably well. But on the GTX 1080, you can turn it up to ultra details and not really lose anything, and the graphics look a lot better. Same thing with Project Cars. That was a game that we tested with mostly a mix of, you know, medium, high, and low detail settings, which is kind of the defaults that it suggests for a VR setup. A card like the 1060, you can start reclaiming some of those details that you had to turn down to play in VR. So you can turn up texture details, you can turn up anti-aliasing, and some of the things that will make a noticeable difference in the actual experience. And one of the interesting things is because the displays on these headsets are relatively low resolution, it's only 1080 by 1200 per eye, yeah. And the lenses add a little bit of distortion on top of that. You don't actually tend to notice lower graphics details as much as you would if you were playing on a traditional display. If you're looking very carefully and looking specifically at the textures, you can see, oh, okay, I don't see quite as much detail there as I would on, you know, let's say a 4K desktop monitor. But the rest of the experience is so immersive that you quickly find yourself not paying attention to the missed details. And the experience itself ends up being something that is much better than you'd ever get on kind of a 4K desktop monitor, even though you have less actual detail in the scene or in the settings in the game. So it's kind of this interesting thing where having lower graphics details and some of those lower end cards isn't as bad as you think it would be, but you still do get quite a lot from stepping up to those higher end cards, and that's just with today's games. We don't know what's going to happen with the next generation of VR experiences, and it is a case where even today getting a higher end card like the 1080 does give you a noticeably better experience than the 1060. This is, or the 1070. This is not like going from, you know, 120 frames per second to 130. It's right. Eliminating even more of those little stutters that can disrupt your sense of presence in the world.
Which is super important if you want to spend 8 hours in your headset, right?
It's tough to spend 8 hours with a headset. Having done that, there is more fatigue associated with VR gaming, even with a seated experience, than there is playing traditional games. It's a little bit more weight from the headset, a little bit of face sweat going on. Your jaw gets tired because you're constantly... The entire time, you have that sort of like trademark Oculus gaping mouth. Yeah, it's a different experience for sure.
I could see that. Great. So one of the biggest things that I really like that the Oculus SDK has is, like we mentioned earlier, I believe we mentioned earlier, is we sort of get diagnostic tools from the SDK, right? So I can see what my performance is mid-game. So while you're playing, you can sort of see, okay, well, maybe this is a feature of the game I need to tweak to make sure I get the best experience for my graphics card. But I think the biggest takeaway here is you're not going to see, again, like you mentioned earlier, Jeff, you're taking all the good speaking points, man. Upgrading a graphics card isn't a matter of 100 hertz versus 120 hertz, and you're barely going to see the different sort of situation. So you definitely do get a better experience for the extra buck you spend, or I say buck, more like, you know, several hundred bucks you'd spend for a more upgraded model. So let's talk about what Asus is doing with GPUs. Obviously, you're here on behalf of Asus, so I don't want to waste your guys' time. Let's talk about you guys' lineup. So you've got the Strix lineup, which are gorgeous cards.
I'll do the product placement right here. So here's the Strix card. I'm not even going to tell you which one this is because they're all very, very similar. We did some cool stuff with this generation, though. One of the things we did specifically for VR was we added a second HDMI port on the back because the HTC Vive and the Oculus Rift both use HDMI to connect. And if you're running an HDMI monitor, you don't want to have to keep swapping cables every time you want to use VR. So instead of doing more DisplayPort on these cards, all of the new Strix cards based on the new generation of Polaris and Pascal GPUs, they all have these dual HDMI ports. We did a couple other cool things. We have something called Fan Connect. which lets you plug system fans directly into the graphics card, and then the graphics card will then control the speed of those fans based on the temperature of the GPU. So it's different how system fans normally work in PCs, where they'll take the temperature of the motherboard or the temperature of the graphics card or the CPU and then use that to dictate system fan speeds. But with VR and with even traditional games, the GPU gets a lot hotter than other components. So this gives you more sort of smarter, more effective cooling for your GPU, and extra cooling if you want to do overclocking or anything like that. And then the other thing, which everything has RGB LEDs these days. So these cards are loaded with them. We've got LEDs on the face. Some of the cards have it on the back as well. We've got a nice illuminated logo on the back plate. So you can control this all with software. Loads of different effects, from your sort of purely cosmetic stuff to one that actually changes temperature or changes color based on the GPU temperature. So you can actually kind of keep an eye on your system that way. And with our new motherboards, we have a new synchronization feature as well. So you can actually have the motherboard lighting completely synchronized with the graphics card lighting. So
can I sync this with dubstep?
You can. There is a music effect version. So whatever music is playing through your computer, the lighting will pulse with it. It's crazy. 16-year-old me would have loved that.
I literally just threw it out there as a bad joke. That's kind of awesome.
Oh, yeah, no, it's great. Well, we try to do, you know, some of the stuff is purely cosmetic. Some of the stuff is functional and based on, you know, system variables. And then you have effects like that, which kind of, they're a little bit of both. So it's a cool thing. If you want to make your system look nice, I mean, our RGB lighting gets a lot of hate now because everybody is doing it, but you don't have to do the super loud kind crazy effects. You can just set a nice color and coordinate it with everything so everything looks like it's all well put together. And that's a big part of what we're doing with the synchronization, is allowing different ASUS components, the lighting, to work together so you can have a one sort of system interface to control all of your lighting and have it all be really sort of cohesive.
That is epic, man. That's epic. And like you said, 16-year-old you would have loved this. I'm going to be the one to come out and say that 23-year-old me still loves it. I just won't tell anyone, right? Even though I just told hundreds of thousands of you. Hopefully hundreds of thousands. Watch this video, guys. awesome. And so that part where we were explaining to the GPU, obviously, that's where the good B-reel footage is going to go. They're amazing. They're gorgeous cards. Jeff, I gotta say, man, every time you come on the show, I end up geeking out and smiling harder than I need to be smiling. I have to walk like this for the rest of the day and sort of like massage my face down. But before we go, is there anything else you want to tell our viewers? Anything you want us to check out?
Actually, one of the other things we did look into briefly, we don't have a full article out on this yet, and I'm not sure if we're even going to do one because we haven't found a lot, but part of this was also, you know, we wanted to figure out how much CPU do you need if you're going to be using VR. So one of my colleagues has been doing some testing with a 10-core CPU and kind of enabling and disabling cores and seeing if it makes a difference. And he's gone all the way down to 2 cores and actually found that performance in project cars doesn't really change that much. So it looks like the CPU requirements, although Oculus recommends a quad core, and if I was telling anybody to buy a gaming system right now, definitely tell them to get a quad core system.
At least.
It looks like the CPU, even if you have a fast dual core chip, you might actually be okay. At least with some of the games that are out there now and the ones that we've tested. What VR seems to be is just really all about having as much graphics power as you actually can have. And there's some interesting things that they're doing with SLI and multiple graphics cards specifically for VR, where they have different graphics card rendering each eye to improve performance for that. And that's something that you need specific developer support for, and something we'll probably see more of in the coming months and years as more developers get into doing VR specific stuff. So there's a lot of cool things coming. And VR is one of those things that I think it's going to drive a lot of graphics card sales, because you need at least kind of a 1060 to get a good experience right now, and you can get a much better one from spending more money. So it's good for us, and it's good for gamers, because, you know, VR it's real now, and it's not one of these things that it's just coming just around the corner. In just a couple of months, it'll be good. You know, there are games out now that work. The headsets that are out now are great. I mean, it's still first generation, but the first generation is pretty cool. So
that is awesome to hear. And that's sort of a commonality amongst games right now, right? PC games right now. So the GPU usually takes the load of the heavy work, right? So we're sort of, I believe the PC gaming community is sort of used to that. That being said, like you said, I'd still recommend at least a quad core. a high-end CPU just for the other things, right? Like, what if you're live streaming, right? You
definitely exactly.
want, yeah, you definitely want a pretty hefty CPU if you're going to be doing VR stuff, if you're going to be heavy PC gaming, especially, it's 2016, guys, just splurge on the i5, i7. Just do it. cool. So, Jeff, if there's nothing else, man, I'd like to thank all you guys for watching and listening and tuning in to OEM TV as always. Jeff, I want to thank you once again for coming. I hope we have another awesome episode. Yeah, I said it again. Awesome. Another awesome episode.
It was awesome to be here, Gavin. Thanks.
Sweet. Sweet. That means I've completed my mission. All right. Well, you guys have a great rest of your day. Thank you, and stay tuned for the next awesome episode of OEM TV.
Thanks, guys.